You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to the Earth Station MCU podcast, your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, The Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, and so much more. Visit us at our Facebook group, Earth Station MCU, at earthstationmcu.wordpress.com, or email us at earthstationmcu@gmail.com. Hello, Marvel Universe! My name is Jennifer Hartshorn, and welcome to episode 18 of Earth Station MCU. There was a lot going on this week in the MCU, including the penultimate episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. For season 2, as well as lots of news. We got Martin Freeman joining the MCU, some possible directors that have come up for Phase 3 movies, and of course, the fantastic news that Agent Carter and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will both be coming back next season. Yay! Alright, so before we get started, I'd like to remind all of you that listen on iTunes or Stitcher to please give us some love in the form of reviews, and to also check out our Facebook group or our WordPress site where you can leave feedback, as well as joining in the conversation about everything cool going on in the MCU. John and I are also active on a number of other Facebook groups, including Earth Station 1, Earth Station Who, Marvel Cinematic Universe, the other Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cosplayers, S.H.I.E.L.D. Level 7, and many more. You can also reach us by email at earthstationmcu@gmail.com. All right, so we've got a lot of stuff to cover tonight, so without further ado, I would like to go ahead and welcome back my co-host, Mr. John Rabin. So how are you doing tonight, John?
I'm doing well. It's been a good weekend, I think.
Good, good. Did you get some writing done?
Yeah, I did. Got another couple articles hopefully kind of come out in the next couple weeks.
And that's for Anglotopia?
It is.
Awesome. So what kind of articles?
There was one actually published last week. It's 10 Facts About Aston Martin.
Oh, neat.
Another one that I'm about to do is 10 Facts on Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which is actually the film's 40th anniversary this year.
Awesome. That's one of those touch points of geek culture that it seems like absolutely everybody knows Monty Python. So that's all.
Exactly. And everyone should be introduced to it at some point in their lives.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's just you can't function in geek culture without an understanding of that movie, I think. So, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm just juggling so much stuff. This past week I had I did 5 podcasts in 4 days. And not doing that again. You were on 3 of them.
That is true.
But I had the Earth Station Who one, and I had Transmissions from Atlantis, and that was good to talk to Jason and Rita and whatnot. So I just did not want to put on headphones ever again by about Tuesday. So keep me busy with that, and I've got the play and everything, so Things have been a little off kilter, but I'm excited to talk about this week's episode. It was a great one. I think that we finally found out what Theta Protocol was, right?
Yes,
finally. But we'll get to that. But we've got a good bit of Marvel news this week as well. I think the biggest thing, and the one that there was the most hoopla online about, was of course Agent Carter getting renewed and S.H.I.E.L.D. getting renewed.
Yep, that was absolutely fantastic news. You got everybody in the cast tweeting about it. Everybody in the MCU seemed to be tweeting about
it,
even with Chris Evans, going in on Twitter and congratulating Haley for the season renewal.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's such a great show. Personally, I enjoy S.H.I.E.L.D., but I just thought that Agent Carter was a much better written, better, more tightly plotted kind of show, and the fact that it's only concentrating on a couple of characters rather than like 10.
And that was really the situation, almost, because it had to be, just being that mid-season replacement. And It remains to be seen if it's going to move to being a full series or if it's going to be just the mid-season season again.
Yep. I mean, I think if they can just recreate what they had this year, that would be fantastic. We talked about what directions they can go in. You know, rather than fighting the Nazis, presumably we're going to be moving more over to Leviathan and more, you know, Russian type threats. Hopefully, we're going to start seeing the beginnings of early S.H.I.E.L.D. On the other hand, it's kind of complicated because we're probably not going to have Dominic Cooper very much.
Yeah, that seems to be pretty surprising because now that he's gotten cast in Preacher,
right?
He's obviously going to be doing that more than he is going to be doing Agent Carter.
And Howard is just such a central character for that whole storyline and for tying it into to the MCU in general and whatnot. Right. But
although you know whose show is ending,
Nathan Fillion.
Well, I was going to say,
they got renewed, didn't they? Yeah, they did get renewed, yeah.
I was thinking of Mad Men.
Oh, true.
John Slattery.
True, but that would require a whole lot of, it just seems like he is a much, much, much older Howard. But, you know, I don't know, maybe if we skip it ahead 10 years or something, that could work, but...
Maybe, and then we'd have to gray up Haley a bit.
True, yeah. I mean, it could work. And good point about the show ending,
yeah.
But so super excited about Agent Carter. Happy that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to keep going. I think it's had its ups and downs. It's just a very different kind of series. It's had some, and the fact that it's got, you know, what, like twice as many episodes as Agent Carter too, you know, probably half of them were very, very, very good. And a lot of them were just like, it's okay. But then the other news was, of course, we had heard that there was going to be this Bobby and Hunter spinoff, and it looks like that got pretty much shut down. It
looks like it. There's been no official word on it, but the word on the street is that it's not going to move forward, and that might be smart. I mean, you don't really want to spread yourself too thin.
When it comes
to these shows, when you can really build up what Agent Carter is and what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is,
right? You know, and Arrow had a couple of years to build up. Was it 2 years? Yeah, it had 2 years before they launched Flash, and of course now DC's launching another Arrow Flashverse spinoff. Plus, they've got a bunch of other properties that are kind of exploding all over the place. Not to mention things like Gotham and whatnot. But
and you know, like you said, we don't know at this time where Constantine's going to land now that NBC's canceled.
Right, and there's rumors that it might be moving to CW. Mm-hmm. Personally, I would rather see it on Sci-Fi. CW is I'm still a huge Supernatural fan, but they can they can go pretty Dawson's Creek and, you know, gratuitous.
And nobody is ugly on the CW.
Oh no,
like, nobody.
No. You know what? Not
nobody looks normal there. Everybody is like
perfect.
Supermodel good looking.
Exactly. You know, and not to say that the people on Constantine aren't good looking, but they're not. The young, 20-something, they're a much older crowd for your main character. I'm not entirely sure if that would be a good fit, but, you know, wherever it ends up being on, I'll be happy, so.
At any rate, Stephen Amell thinks would be willing to cameo no matter where it goes.
Right, exactly. So, that's a little bit weird. Because those are two very different ends of the DC sandbox. It seems like has Constantine ever crossed over with the main superhero stuff?
I mean, sometimes it's been very rare. His first appearance actually was in the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Oh, it was? Oh gosh.
Yeah. Well before Vertigo was a twinkle in DC's eye.
I just knew it from Vertigo. So. Interesting. Okay, well, so I think that it's a good call. I think, you know, I think Agent Carter is a really strong series. I'm glad they're giving it another chance to move forward. I think that the Bobby and Mac thing could have been interesting, but it would have it would have taken some work. Did I say Bobby and Mac? I meant Bobby and Hunter. But I just wasn't super excited about it, so I think they probably made the right call with that.
Yeah, and I'd have to agree. I mean, I'd like to see both characters continue on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll get to some more stuff with that.
Yeah.
We're talking about Infinity Wars is going to be shot in IMAX. I don't know if you're aware of what the difference there is, because obviously they've been doing IMAX versions of movies.
Right.
And this is apparently some kind of new 2D camera or something, so I'm not really sure what the significance of that is, but...
It's gonna be big!
It's gonna be big, yeah, that was...
The quote Regis Philbin.
Indeed.
It's gonna be big! Big!
Exactly.
And you know what other great news we got this week? The full, or at least as far as we know, the full cast listing for Captain America Civil War.
Right, right. And, you know, the one that I was the most excited about, because it seemed for a while like we were going for everybody except Thor and Hulk. That was the direction that it seemed to be going. And just hearing about more and more stuff getting added in. Is it confirmed that Spider-Man's going to be in it?
It has not been confirmed yet, yeah. Which is one of the reasons why I say, you know, the full cast listing that we've been told.
Right, right.
Because there could always be surprises, as there was in Age of Ultron, with Julie Delpy and Linda Cardellini showing up.
What was I keep meaning to check on that. What was Julie Delpy?
I believe she was the person in charge of the Red Room.
Oh, okay. That was not... That went by so fast, I didn't even pick up on that. Interesting.
Yeah, you don't really see much of her, but of course, you know, Linda Cardellini's role was very significant.
Right. Yeah, that was a lot more central. But
and that was something that they did a good job keeping under wraps until, of course, her name showed up on the red carpet list.
Right, exactly. But even then, we weren't really sure what she was doing. But so presumably Spider-Man's going to be in it once that gets cast.
Yes, once we know about
right,
it.
Once it's official, we now know Ant-Man is going to be in it, which is pretty cool.
Yes, that was really exciting, and the fact that, you know, now we know that this character is gonna have a life after his movie comes out, and it looks like he could be joining, you know, either the Avengers or just, you know, either Cap's side or Iron Man's side.
Right, exactly. Now, have they confirmed whether or not Daredevil's going to be in it?
They have not. I think they're probably going to save Daredevil for Infinity Wars.
Yeah, they've talked about bringing all the Defenders in on that. It would be nice, I mean, it would be nice to have a mention, at least, of him and the other Netflix folks, but this movie is so, so, so packed with people as it is.
Right. And, I mean, we're only going to have a couple of these series out by the time that this comes into theaters.
Right. We're definitely going to have had, obviously, Daredevil and Jessica Jones. And I guess it kind of depends on, I think Luke Cage is the third one, and I guess it kind of depends on when that drops. If it drops, like, you know, in February or March, then it would be out in time. But I guess we'll see. I haven't seen any firm schedule for when the other ones are going to come out, so.
Right. And of course they did release the synopsis as well, which seems to start off kind of like it does in the comics with Civil War. In the comics you have a younger team of heroes called the New Warriors, and at that point in their comics history they were actually filming themselves as kind of a cops reality type show. And one of their busts where they find three of villains hiding out goes really, really wrong and ends up destroying most of a small town.
Gotcha.
Basically, one of the villains blows himself up and it's almost like an atom bomb going off. So they seem to suggest with this synopsis that something very bad is going to happen at the beginning of Civil War.
As opposed to Ultron, you know.
Something with a good amount of collateral damage. That was obviously attempted to be avoided in Civil War.
In Age of Ultron.
And, you know, you're going to have the nations of the world clamoring for some kind of accountability for these superheroes.
And it's funny because, you know, I believe in the comics and in the way that it's being set up for this, Tony is actually on the government side of saying people need to be registered, right? Which is hilarious when you think back to things like Iron Man 2.
where he was like, I absolutely will not come under the control of the government. That's, you know, the suit and I are one. You can't have it. You know, it's a weapon of mass destruction, but it's mine, you know?
Yeah, and in the comics that kind of changed once Tony became the head of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
So he was, after what happened with the New Warriors, he was leading the charge on, we need more accountability in our community.
Well, yeah, and I think that's, it's an interesting, and we'll talk about that when we get to S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's an interesting parallel, you know, with the whole, I was looking at an article today where they were pointing out that in many ways, the Index is basically like the Mutant Registration Act. You know,
right.
It's saying we have to have a list of all the people with powers, and, you know, we'll get to that. But we don't really know where everybody's going to be coming down in terms of sides. Mm-hmm. It certainly seems like the new Avengers team that we had at the end of Age of Ultron would logically be on Cap's side, but on the other side, you know, do we think that Patriot... Is he Iron Patriot or War Machine at this point?
He's back to being War Machine. We did away with the Iron Patriot silliness.
Got it. Okay, so War Machine, it'll be interesting to see, because normally he's Mr. Super pro-government military kind of thing, and it seems like he'd be inclined to side with Tony in that side, but we'll see. You know...
And, you know, despite being a creation in part of Stark...
Right.
You really don't know where the Vision might end
right,
up.
Right, because, you know, on the one hand, obviously he understands, you know, he's created from Tony and Tony's perspective, but then again, he was created by the Tony that, you know, was like, I am Iron Man, and you can't have the suit. So, mm-hmm. and he obviously has ideas of his own now at this point about, you know, individuality and self-determination and things like that. Because he was also created by Ultron, for that matter. So we'll see how that goes. I think that's going to be the big story of speculation for a while now in terms of where different people are going to end up coming down on that. Another thing that came out this week that was kind of interesting was Mark Ruffalo was being interviewed, and he talked a little bit about possible directions for Hulk.
Right.
You know, obviously, he's done the two Avengers movies. Presumably, he's going to be around to do Infinity War, we assume. And he's mentioned that that it's possible that he could show up in another person's movie, you know, much like Black Widow has come in and been, you know, the second banana for a bunch of things. I just don't see how Hulk can be. I mean, Hulk. I don't think Hulk can. I think Bruce Banner potentially could be, you know, a resource for somebody in a movie. But I just don't see Hulk as being. I mean, if Hulk's there, he's kind of the story right there.
Not to mention, I mean, he is kind of, as they point out in Age of Ultron, he's the kind of guy who tries to avoid
exactly,
the fight.
Exactly.
So if he does show up, I mean, it would be as Bruce, it wouldn't be as
right.
the Hulk.
You know, I can see him, I could see him, like, Bruce Banner being in something like Ant-Man, you know, like coming and saying, oh, we need to find out about gamma rays or whatever, or, you know, there's this thing right. going on or something. But, you know, as of the end of Age of Ultron, you know, he's AWOL. We don't know where he's headed, and so, you know, bringing
exactly.
Banner back is even problematic.
And if they do like his own movie, I mean, he's got options. We already teased the kind of the creation of the leader in the Incredible
mm-hmm.
Hulk. You've still got the Abomination,
right.
even though he's locked up. Although that was a shield that well. I don't know. I guess it was more of a government facility rather than a show facility.
See, Coulson refers to something about having Blonsky on ice, though, right? So
right.
I was under the impression that was a S.H.I.E.L.D. facility, and when all the Hydra stuff happened, I was expecting them to at least reference that, but it wasn't. So I don't know. We don't know what happened with that.
Not to mention, I mean, we've got General Ross is showing up in Captain America:
yes,
Civil War.
Yes, absolutely, and that's
so that could spin off
sure,
into something.
Sure, sure. A lot of people, of course, are clamoring for a Planet Hulk type thing or mm-hmm. World War Hulk or whatever. It just seems like, as much as Marvel is fond of saying that Black Widow is a problematic character, you know, Hulk is a really problematic character in terms of how do you work him into something.
And they said part of the problem with that, or at least I think Mark Ruffalo himself said that, was that some of those rights are still with Universal. So that's what's kind of tangling everything up and making it harder for them to do another Hulk film. But, I mean, we've definitely got options for him to have villains. I mean, we've got the leader. You've got, you haven't seen Red Hulk,
right.
Who is now, like, one of the characters on Agents of Smash.
right.
So you could, there are options for them to be able to do things that aren't even Planet Hulk.
Right. Yeah, there's lots of directions. I mean, that's the thing about the MCU is it's been going for so long, and there are so many storylines out there that there's just countless ways that you can go from there. But yeah, so the Universal thing is an issue in terms of standalone, as well as just how do you work him into a story? You know, as we were saying, there's the fact that Banner does not want to be in the fight. And yet that's what we come to see. We come to see the Hulk. Mm-hmm. And when the Banner side of him is trying very hard to not do the one thing that the audience wants to see, it's kind of difficult.
Yeah, we don't get to see his party trick.
Exactly. Yes, my party trick. That was awesome. There was a little bit of Twitterverse stuff going on this week. We had Chris Evans and Frank Grillo having a little bit of a good-natured Twitter war, I guess.
Yeah, that was a very hilarious thing, and I think the first news outlet I saw it on almost portrayed it as if they thought it was real for a second. Like, no, just read what they're saying. These guys are obviously joking with each other about not being able to read or not being very smart.
Yeah,
or,
and Grillo is playing one of the main bad guys in Civil War, correct?
Right, Crossbones? That is correct. He's definitely gonna fully show up as Crossbones this time. If you've ever seen the art for the game Army of Two, the kind of like the helmet skull mask is what Grillo is saying Crossbones' outfit is going to look like. Yeah,
interesting. Oh, I started to just go off that, but the other interesting bit of casting news this week for Civil War was, of course, Martin Freeman.
Yes.
Who I was very excited about. I'm, a huge, huge, huge Sherlock fan. And, obviously he's got a much bigger name for himself, having done the Hobbit stuff, not to mention The Office and everything.
Mm-hmm. Hitchhiker's Guide.
Absolutely. The original and the one and only Arthur Dent to me.
Yes.
So that was exciting. And he's playing, again, do we have this officially, or is it still just speculation?
It's still speculation, but the reigning theory, and it seems to make sense for him, is that he's going to be Everett Ross, who in the Black Panther comics was kind of a State Department attaché for the Nation of Wakanda and for T'Challa when he was spending some time in New York. And he's just kind of one of these guys that, because of his association with the Black Panther, all this kind of life dump happens to him, and that certainly seems to be along the lines of all the characters that Martin Freeman's has ever played.
Hero,
I think with the exception of The Office, because he gets the universe dumped on him in Hitchhiker's Guide, he gets this quest dumped on him in The Hobbit,
and the whole I referenced it to somebody this weekend. Yeah.
Sherlock and The World's End and just all this stuff just happens.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking of the Cornetto trilogy stuff that he had. So yeah, that's very true. Now you said his name was what?
Everett Ross.
And don't we have General Ross also?
Okay. No relation.
I guess that's just one of those weird coincidences, because it's like, wait a second. That seems a little odd. But yeah, so if he's an American government official, I'm not real happy, because I don't think he has the world's greatest American accent, but...
We don't know if he's going to try to put on an American accent yet.
But
I mean, it is possible to be British and work for the American government.
It is. That's not completely out of the question, but we'll see. I think that it would make sense. He seems to be a character role, from what I've heard, that is has some lighter moments in the comics. Something about him running around without pants.
Yeah, he loses them, and apparently a demon gives him some pants while they wait for Black Panther to get back to the apartment.
So
it's one of the more odd moments, I think, from that Black Panther series.
So he'll be another character in there, and that's going to be yet another tie-in to connect between Civil War and Black Panther. So by the time we get to Black Panther, we're going to have a lot of elements having been introduced. Obviously, we've got Black Panther, we've got this character, and of course, we've already had Ulysses Klaue introduced. So we're going to be hearing more about Wakanda and all of that. So I think that'll be a good way of being able to ease into the movie, which is the opposite of what obviously they were doing in Phase 1 and Phase 2, which was more introducing a character and then getting them integrated into the main storyline. As opposed to with this, where the main storyline is what is introducing him.
Right.
So yeah, what else we got? There's been a little bit of discussion about possible Spider-Man directors. I don't know. I just, you know, at this point there are a few names that it's exciting to see because they've worked on other stuff that we know about. I always think that who's writing it is way more interesting than who's directing it. Just in terms of the amount of control that they have over the story.
I tend to sit on the opposite side of that because, you know, even though I'm a writer, it's interesting to see who's going to be bringing this to life, because obviously the director holds a lot of sway. You know, once you've written the script. It's kind of out of your hands.
This is unconfirmed at this point, but the at least what some of the websites and whatnot are saying is that it's between Jonathan Levine, who did Warm Bodies, Ted Melfi, who did St. Vincent, that I have never heard of, Jason Moore, who did Pitch Perfect, which is one of my all-time favorite movies, but I don't know that it's necessarily a good fit for this. John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein, who did the Vacation reboot, and Jared Hess, who did Napoleon Dynamite. Now, when I see these things, I just have to remind myself, you know, as you said a couple of weeks ago, let's remember that the person who started the entire MCU prior to Iron Man, his biggest hit was Elf.
And it certainly seems like when you list out those directors and the movies that they're most famous for, I think with the exception of Daly and his directing partner on Vacation, most of them are really about teenagers, and they really focus on teenagers. So they're obviously wanting somebody who has the experience of working with teens and kind of telling their stories on screen. And with that said, I mean, I'm rooting for Levine because I really was a fan of Warm Bodies. I thought it was a good story with a lot of comedic moments. And really also of heart and character depth.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that people are commenting on is that this Spider-Man is going to have more of like a John Hughes movie kind of feel to it. You know, like 80s Breakfast Club and, you know, Say Anything and things like that. Which makes sense because you've generally got the pretty girl and the nerdy guy and how do they get together. And really that can be the basis for Spider-Man movies. So.
And of course, you know, with, you know, villains trying to kill you and blow things up. You've got a teenage. You're gonna have a teenage Peter Parker trying to balance getting the girl, fighting the bad guy
in high school,
bringing home the bacon for his for his widowed aunt, and in high school.
So yeah, I mean, it certainly has potential. I'm like many people. I think at this point, I'm just super super burned out on Spidey on his own. I think it'll be awesome to have him in the MCU. Totally excited, but I have just gotten very, very bored with the Spider-Man origin story and everything. And, you know, with it focusing on him as being younger and having more high school problems, You know, it, and it's, right. I mean, clearly it's aimed at a different audience, too. You know, they've been going fairly middle of the road and not shooting for, like, particular audiences with Phase 1 and 2. You know, arguably people are saying that they're getting away from that with Phase 3, where you've got Black Panther and you've got Captain Marvel that are more, you know, aimed at a particular kind of audience that has been marginalized by regular comics. But on the whole, it seems like a lot of stuff has been aimed at a much older audience than your average superhero movie used to be. You know, the fact that, Tony is kind of the tentpole character for this entire series at this point, he's 50. And, you know, which is not to say that older characters can't appeal to a younger audience and vice versa. But it certainly seems like Spider-Man's...
I mean, there are plenty of kids out there who like to pretend to be Iron Man.
You've got, you know, like Iron Man toys for five-year-olds and everything. But with the tone that they're going for with Spider-Man, I'm kind of expecting it to be a more teen-oriented kind of movie. But, you know, bringing more people into the MCU family is all good.
Right. And it certainly seems that way, but, you know, we look back at these... at the movies these the short list of directors have done, and it's had both kind of a teen appeal as well as an adult appeal.
Warm Bodies, things like that. Obviously, like I said, Pitch Perfect is certainly I know people of all ages that like that. So in fact, I'm really excited that Pitch Perfect 2 is coming out. So, but anyway.
Just any chance to watch Anna Kendrick on screen for me?
She's awesome, and I'm a mute.
I have a slight crush, I admit.
Yeah. And I am a musical theater geek, so therefore and an a cappella geek, so you know, that combination means Pitch Perfect is right in my wheelhouse, but
although I haven't seen the first one.
Pitch Perfect? Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah.
You have to. It's awesome.
I imagine hilarious. Somebody's gonna make me watch it at some point in my life, and I like that the guy from one of the guys from Workaholics is in it as well, and Rebel Wilson, and
they've got some great cameos, but anywho, that's Pitch Perfect. So yeah, we've got a lot of different options for directors. As I said, you know, personally, I think that the director is at least as important as the writer, but the writer, you know, sets the tone, says which story are we telling, and then the director says how are we going to tell it, you know. But you know, if you look at even within the MCU, like the difference between, you know, I was so sure that Thor was going to be stupid, and then they get Kenneth Branagh and he makes it a genuine Norse epic, because that's he is an epic, you know, serious storyteller.
And you can see the difference whenever they change directors from Thor to Thor the Dark World, or, you know, Jon Favreau from Iron Man 2 to Shane Black in Iron
Man
3.
Very different tone. Good point. So yeah, we'll see. But I think that, you know, as anticipated as Civil War is, and, you know, as central as it is to the, you know, the ongoing story arc, and as packed as it is with people, I think there are many people that are even more excited for an MCU Spider-Man movie. So they've got some big shoes to step into in terms of representing what fans are hoping to see. So anyway, I think that's it for our major news for this week. So we're going to go ahead and take a little break, and when we come back, we will be talking about this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Scars.
Welcome to the realm of skepticality.
Skepticality.
What is skepticality? Skepticality is a podcast for those of us who view the world in a skeptical way. We do our best to find the truth behind the news, urban legends, UFOs, paranormal encounters, science, underreported social issues, and historical misconceptions.
You just don't get it.
Do you have a problem with the news? Do you like to make fun of those neighbors with tinfoil hats? Do you want to learn some new stuff? Do you want to get something you're not going to hear on your 24-hour McNews channel or the local radio dial?
Sure, yeah.
Right. Then tune in by visiting us at www.skepticality.com.
Spell it.
That's S-K-E-P-T-I-C-A-L-I-T-Y.com.
grab a couple of shows and stick them in your ear.
Ooh, it's waxy in there.
And by all means, don't listen to that voice in my head.
Voice? What voice?
No voice.
Skepticality. Truth in podcasting.
All right, welcome back, and we are now talking about this week's episode, Scars. We had, we had a lot of stuff coming together. This was the episode directly following Age of Ultron, so we had some plot threads to tie up there. The first of which being, of course, Theta Protocol. And I know we were both really upset because we were expecting for that to be answered in the movie. And it's funny because obviously we had you know recorded the episode and everything, and when it posted, I think it was Elizabeth Laney that pointed out that when we were speculating about it in the last episode, I had actually said, "Is it the helicarrier?" So,
and it was the helicarrier.
Yeah, I'm usually wrong when I guess these things, but I mean, what else could it have been, really? That was the big thing. Yeah. Aw. Loved it starting off with the Koenigs. Obviously, that was something where Patton Oswalt had just kind of showed up for the afternoon to do the shooting and wasn't really in the rest of the episode. But they had a lot of really cute moments with that. Obviously, you know, the Star Wars boxers and all that.
Yeah, the Star Wars sheets. I mean, he had the old Star Wars sheets from the 70s.
Yes, that's right. That's right, yeah. And video game boxers and talking about Call of Duty and
the socks.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And, of course, he had it wasn't Sky Mall, but it was obviously it was like called Sky Store or something like that. And he's like, Coulson hands it to him and he's like, "Oh, I hope these people never go out of business."
Which, it is one of those fun things to read when you're on a flight. It's like, what kind of overpriced crap can I buy this time?
Right, but the funny thing being, of course, that it has gone out of business, and this was seen taking place last year.
Oh yeah.
So, but that was a cute scene. You know, talking about lanyards and things like that. It was a good way of tying things together. But here's the thing. They haven't actually said that the Koenigs are life model decoys, have they?
No. As far as we know, they were just identical triplets who happened to work for S.H.I.E.L.D.
But aren't there more than... I thought we'd seen that there were more than three of them.
As far as we know, there are three brothers. Okay. There's apparently also a sister.
Yes, that's right, because there was a note on his mirror or something about call your sister, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so maybe they are just identical triplets or something. That's certainly possible. Because I was thinking afterwards, I was like, wait a second, if he's just like a robot basically, then why does he have to sleep? Why does he have to have an alarm set? But I don't know. Hopefully we'll find out. So in addition, of course, to Theta Protocol being the big secret that Coulson was keeping, we'd also had referenced last week that Gonzalez had something in the hold of his ship that we didn't know what that was.
Something that's been speculated about for a while now, and now we know.
Well, yeah.
Well, sort of.
I was going to say, okay, we've seen it, but what is it? It's like the monolith, except it's got like little indentations in it, and it can turn to liquid and then be back solid again. So,
and apparently somehow it can, you know, end the Inhumans.
Right. And, I mean, is there any kind of parallel to that in the comics that you can think of?
Nothing that comes to mind. I mean, I'd have to do a little bit more research, but...
not that I'm an expert by any means, but that's one of those things where normally if there's something that ties in like that, then all kinds of people on the internet are all excited and going, "Oh, do you think it's this? Do you think it's this?" And I haven't really heard any speculation on that.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really know what this is other than it's bad for the Inhumans, and apparently S.H.I.E.L.D.'s had it for quite a while.
Right. Which, seeing as they didn't know about Inhumans, and they really didn't even, I mean, I think they mentioned that they'd had it for 100 years or something. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess they could tell that it was, you know, semi-alien or technological or something like that. Or maybe they just saw it turn to goo and then go back to solid and said, "Wow, this is not something that everyday people should be messing with." But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And to jump into the big thing, all of our ongoing speculations about what's going to happen with Gonzalez, and is he going to be...
apparently not.
Yeah.
It seems so nice that for a while, it seemed like he was doing well. Like, at first we thought, oh, Gonzalez is going in there, this is going to be a disaster, and
right.
he's going to start a war with the Inhumans. But you see him at the very beginning, you know, he approaches Jiang, or mm-hmm. Jiang, from a perspective of peace. He tries to build a consensus, tries to show what they have in common. And unfortunately...
That backfires big time.
Big time. And in a way that I don't think anybody could have foreseen, and I think it really goes back to the idea that Jiang planned this from the beginning.
Oh, yeah. I think she definitely did. Although, I thought that, you know, when he said, I have a gift for you, and I'm like, oh, no, it's going to explode. It's going to be something terrible. And it was the good luck charm that she had made for mm-hmm. Sky. And that's like... the sweetest thing in the world. And it was like, wow, this is... Gonzalez is not coming in being the warmongering, you know, jerk who is trying to subjugate them. He's actually trying to do something very nice. And then she turns around and is like, no, I'm going to blow you up now.
Yeah, and one of the parts where he kind of screwed up was when he starts talking about the index... Mm-hmm. with the woman who was cut up and dissected by Whitehall.
Right.
Who is inclined to already believe that what S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to do as soon as they get a hold of them is lock them up.
Right, register and experiment all their powers. On them.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Just as bad.
And, you know, obviously the title of the episode is Scars, and we've got a couple of different ways that can be tied together, including with Maya, too. But, you know, that ends up being the key phrase that sets her off, is that, you know, he's saying, we have a lot in common. You know, I got injured in the battle with Hydra, and so did you.
And she's like, we are nothing alike!
Yeah.
Rage!
And I was expecting them to show her and show her eyes get big or something, but she actually played it extremely cool at that point. And it wasn't until that she busted out the Terrigen crystal that she's like, we are nothing alike! So, that was definitely, didn't see that coming. You know, as you said, fully expected Gonzalez to be the one to go in there, but obviously that was her intention from the start. And then she, and interestingly, you know, obviously Reyna was thinking that she had a shot at taking power, and we'd seen that Jiang's influence was maybe not as stable as we thought. But when she comes out shot, of course everyone's going to back her.
And you know, we see kind of a couple indications, just moments foreshadowing that things are going to go badly, for one, when Reyna has her dream, but of course, Reyna, being the manipulative person that she is, now, of course, nobody believes her when, you know, by the end, we find out, oh, well, she was telling the truth the whole time.
Right.
And you also have the moment when Jiang was, Jiang, mm-hmm. I keep saying it the wrong way.
I know.
Jiang was saying, my people would never follow me into a war willingly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that kind of gives us the indication that she fakes her being shot and having to defend herself with Gonzalez.
Right, exactly. And I'm sure she's aware of the fact that Sky is one of the, you know, the linchpins on this, because she's Sky and it's all about her. But, you know, if she can turn Sky against S.H.I.E.L.D., then she's got a huge ally.
And if you've seen the clip for next week, it's certainly like... She gives, you know, we see in the clip, she gives her the lucky charm and says, you know, you've got some time to make your decision.
Right. So that may end up being our cliffhanger,
mm-hmm.
In terms of which way is Sky going to go. But yeah, that was definitely did not see that coming. And I'll admit, I completely did not see the thing with Maya, with her, you know, putting on her May face.
Yep.
And going off with Bobby, and then, and Wardy's just such a great bad guy. He's the man you love to hate. Because, I mean, we'd even said after the last episode, it's like, wow, I guess maybe he's gone. We're not going to see him for the rest of the season or something. And
not quite.
No. But yeah, so that was unexpected. I'm not sure where they're going to go with that. I'm not sure if they're going to resolve that, because potentially that could have been a good lead-in for a Bobby show or something.
And supposedly that's what that was supposed to be, like the where Hunter and Bobby end up at the end of this season was supposed to springload them into their own show.
Right.
But now we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And at the same time, but we've also got this exploration of apparently the whole thing is Bobby did something to Agent 33, and we can infer that whatever Bobby did was some kind of betrayal that led to 33 getting captured by Hydra. So
right.
She holds Bobby responsible.
Right. And well, and furthermore, Bobby was, you know, when we first met Bobby, she was posing as the head of Hydra security.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody had been in a potential position to be able to save her, it seems like she perhaps could have.
Right. And 33, you know, obviously asked Simmons, you know, did you know Bobby was working for Hydra?
Yeah. Well, yeah. The way that she's, I think the way that she said it was,
mm-hmm.
did you meet Bobby when you were working for Hydra or something like that?
Right.
And she's like, well, no. Simmons is just so funny and awkward and awesome. She's like, no, she had very dark hair then. I'm like, what?
It's like, I didn't really know her.
Yeah, she had dark hair. Yeah, that totally explains everything. But so yeah, so that's an interesting thing. You know, obviously, that's going to be set up to springload a series that it looks like is probably not going to happen. So then they'll have to do a little bit of a rewrite for the beginning of next season to fold them back in. I'm wondering maybe this is going to end with Hunter going to rescue Bobby or something like that.
Could be.
You know, with potentially, you know. Obviously, we lost Mac in this episode, which I was not particularly broken up over. I mean, he's cool, but he's kind of been a dick.
Yeah, I mean, he has been. I still like him, you know, because I've been a fan of Henry Simmons since he was on NYPD Blue.
Right.
So it's kind of sad for me to see him go. And also the fact that, you know, with him gone, Where's the minority representation on the show anymore?
Yeah, the people of color ratio is dropping steadily. You know, there's May, but, and I mean, people are like, oh, well, Skye's half Chinese. Kind of. but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. But yeah, I mean, he was potentially a cool character, but
right.
You know, when he sided with Bobby against the rest of the team, you know, she was giving people the benefit of the doubt, and he was like, no, let's just take him down. He was just very cold about it, and I was like,
well, you know, I think he was still a little ticked about being taken over by an alien.
Well, there was
mind
that
or whatever.
Yeah, there was that. That was, you know, certainly a bad experience that anyone would not want to have.
Mm-hmm.
But so with Mac gone and Bobby captured, and Hunter presumably going off to rescue her, and then we've got, what is it, Skye, Coulson, and May are at Afterlife. What about Fitz and Simmons? Do we know where they're at right now?
I think they were back at the base.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, if you've seen the
if you've seen the
poster teaser for SOS Part 1,
they're going to be very, very central to that.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, they're back at the base. That's right. And
I think Coulson
May
is there as well, because yes. I don't. Coulson
right.
Didn't go with them.
Right. That was the whole thing, was that Coulson was going to go. That's right. Coulson was going to go, and Gonzalez ended up going, and Coulson was like, "Yeah, that's cool. I'll stay back and quarterback it from here." So the team is very split up at this point. And not to mention that we've, you know, even before that we've had a lot of, you know, very, very awkward confrontations and whatnot. The whole thing between Coulson and May, you know, they were like the tightest alliance in this show for the longest time. And she's clearly not okay with the way that he has handled things.
No, and I think there's going to have to be some bridge building and some hand-holding and some kumbaya singing before
yeah, the, I mean, this. He was trying. He was trying to, you know, to make it work this time, and she's like, nope, you're a big fat liar. So, but, you know, but in terms of bridge building, Coulson came into this episode, and he was like, I've thought about it, and, you know, I want to combine our two groups, and I do want to be in charge, but I want you to be my oversight. And it was at that point that Gonzalez had a great speech, and I haven't seen people really giving this speech its due, I think, because he had that great speech pointing directly to Age of Ultron about the fact that the whole reason why things went so horribly badly in Age of Ultron is because Tony Stark was just doing stuff on his own with no oversight. Yep. And, you know, and of course Gonzalez has a different perspective on it, but he thinks that, you know, the Avengers kind of stood by and did nothing. Well, they kind of didn't know, but, you know, but Tony was, you know, he was being mad scientist. He was doing his own thing, and he didn't care what other people said. And, you know, it very much was his hubris that caused the entire thing. You know, his believing that, you know, and
of course, it's also his hubris that helped save the whole thing.
That's true, too. But, you know, still, it's like, okay, you've cleaned up your mess, but, you know, in the process, we ended up destroying, you know, the Hulk ended up destroying the capital of Wakanda, and Sokovia's not in such great shape, and all that. I thought it was a great speech, though, and I'm glad that Gonzalez had a super cool moment like that before he got taken out, because I'm really going to miss that character. I thought he was pretty awesome. Cal, of course, I'm a big Cal fan, and he was in good form this week. Again, I think they're doing a good job lately of using him, but not letting him completely take over the storyline.
Right.
Because he's such a big personality, and Kyle MacLachlan plays it so well.
Just this large ham, and yep. it's fantastic.
Yeah, he makes it. It's not so over the top that it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's a character that makes you smile, but you know that there's that danger there, and that was why I was really surprised when they were like, oh yeah, we'll just do, you know, you gave us Sky and Lincoln back, we'll give you Cal since you want it. And I mean, especially because, you know, she's been talking about how, you know, they're going to capture us and do experiments on us, and then she's going to turn her husband over. Now, admittedly, not on 100% great terms with the husband.
Well, it was still his idea, though.
It was his idea, but then we see at the very end, that's what he's doing, because they're taking him onto the plane, and they're like, what are these vials? And he's like, don't know.
And they're all empty.
yep, exactly. So that's, you know, clearly that's some of his hide formula or whatever that's presumably gonna pop once they get him on the plane. And that will be a fun scene for the next episode, definitely. But yeah, that's definitely a good way to take them out from the inside. That's like, you know, sending Banner in or something like that. Maybe not quite that bad, but
yeah, we got code hide now.
right, you know, and you know, it's not that his secret is he's always angry. It's better living through chemistry. He's got these vials of stuff. So so that'll be interesting. I think that, you know, going into this, it maybe doesn't have the same, you know, but by the episode that was after the big movie released last year, I mean, that was that Turn? Was that the one before or after Winter Soldier?
I think that was before.
I think you're right. Yeah, that was right, because that was the one where Ward takes out Hand and everything. But so anyway, the episodes right before and after Winter Soldier, I think, are a couple of the best episodes that the show has ever done. I don't know that this really holds up to the same level as what we had last year, but it wasn't bad. You know, it was a good tie-in, and when you consider the fact that they got as much tie-in as they did out of a movie that didn't have any direct ties to S.H.I.E.L.D. other than the helicarrier showing up at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think that worked pretty well. So, all right. If we're going to go ahead and do a rating then. So, on a scale of 1 to 5 S.H.I.E.L.D.s, 1 being terrible and 5 being, oh my god, awesome, where would you place this one?
I'm going to place this one squarely at a 4.
Okay.
I think they could have done some more to punch it up a bit, but what we got that was punchy was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, the confirmation that Theta Protocol was a helicarrier to how this week's episode ended is set up for the two-parter next week.
Mm-hmm.
The middle kind of was like, okay, but the beginning and the ending were just, you know, punches right to the mouth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was good. I guess I will give it a 4, but I was going to give it a 3.5 because I think it was a good episode, but not really great. What bumps it up for me was the Koenigs, because, you know, I just love Patton Oswalt and all the cool little geek touches they had in his first scene there. It was, you know, obviously there was a lot happening, but, you know, much like people have complained about Age of Ultron being, you know, an Empire Strikes Back kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you had story and there was drama and everything there, but it really just sort of felt like tying up loose ends from before and setting up the next thing rather than it being its own individually contained story. You know, what we had was good, but, you know, I'm also a big fan of... Well, actually, I take that back. I was about to say there wasn't any fight scenes, but we did get a good fight scene between
Agent Bobby 33. And Agent 33, yeah,
that was good. That was good. But, you know, there was just a lot going on and good story, but yeah, I'll give it a 4.
And
yeah,
just about any of these series, you know, when you have the big finale coming up, kind of the episode before tends to be a bit more like the calm before the storm.
Right, definitely. And like I said, I totally did not see the Gonzalez thing coming, and I totally did not see the Agent 33 thing coming. So that's always a plus. All right, so next week we're going to have our episode that will be covering actually 2 hours worth, because they're calling it a 2-hour season finale. Really, they're just showing the last two episodes back to back. But sure, that's a 2-hour season finale.
Yay, technically that counts.
Yes, absolutely. So we will be coming back next week to talk about that 2-part season finale. And where things are going from here. Where is this going to leave us, and how does this set us up for the next season? So that will be all for us for tonight, and we will see you next week.
A little bird once said to me, you gotta live a little before you're happy, and if you take a lot, you'll be left with none. I had to learn a bit, live a bit, let it all sink in a bit.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.